Herzlich willkommen zum Female Leadership Podcast. Mein Name ist Vera Marie Strauch und ich bin Host hier im Podcast, in dem es darum geht, dass du deinen ganz eigenen Stil im Job und Leben findest und deinen Weg mutig und selbstbewusst gehst. In der heutigen Folge ist zum zweiten Mal hier im Podcast der Bestseller-Autor John Strzelecki zu Besuch. Er hat Bücher geschrieben, wie zum Beispiel Das Café am Rande der Welt oder auch The Big Five for Life. Und seine Bücher sind in unzählige Sprachen, ich glaube es sind über 41 Sprachen auf der ganzen Welt übersetzt worden, sind wirklich in ganz vielen Ländern Number One Bestseller und er ist einfach ein sehr erfolgreicher Autor, der auch gerade ein neues Buch herausgebracht hat, was ich gelernt habe. Und wir haben gemeinsam an unser vorangegangenes Gespräch anknüpfend über Ziele und Erfolg gesprochen. Auch wie finde ich überhaupt so meinen ganz eigenen Erfolgsweg, meine eigene Geschichte, die Dinge, die mich ausmachen und die ich vielleicht auch mit anderen teilen kann, die ich geben kann, auch im Arbeitskontext und auch Orientierung in einer Welt, in der viel möglich ist, vieles auch nicht möglich ist, in der ich vielleicht sehr viele Ideen habe oder gar keine Idee habe. Was soll das eigentlich alles? Was ist eigentlich mein persönlicher Sinn? Über all diese Fragen haben wir gesprochen. Es ist ein ganz buntes, vielseitiges Gespräch geworden, in dem John ganz persönliche und auch, wie ich finde, sehr öffnende, interessante Gedanken teilt, die ganz praktisch für dich auch im Alltag umsetzbar und anwendbar sind. Das erste Interview war mit John Strzelecki, wenn du Lust hast reinzuhören, ist vielleicht auch im Anschluss an dieses Gespräch oder vielleicht auch als Vorbereitung ganz interessant. Da sprechen wir vor allem auch über dieses Konzept der Big Five for Life, der großen fünf Ziele, Dinge, die ich mir für mein Leben wünsche. Wir verlinken auf jeden Fall auch die Folge 84, ist es hier im Podcast in den Shownotes. Jetzt wünsche ich dir ganz viel Freude mit diesem schönen Gespräch und dann legen wir gleich mal los. So, I'm super happy and grateful that John Strzelecki is again on the podcast today. Welcome, John. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm honored to be back. I wish that we were sitting in front of each other in person like we did last time, but situation being as they are, I'm thrilled that we at least get to do it this way. So that's fantastic. Nice to see you again.
In our last conversation, we spoke about many things, among them goals in life. And I know that the people who listen to this podcast and also listen to our last conversation are very much interested in how to find meaning, but also very concrete steps of where to go, what to do, how can I find with all the distraction, also all the limitations that are especially there right now, how can I find my path, my way? And you're an expert on that, so I'm curious, just to pick up where we left, do you have big goals for yourself for the next steps?
So first of all, thank you. That's, I mean, one of the things I love to do at this point in my life is to help people discover and live their life purpose. And as part of that, there is the second piece, which you and I had a chance to talk about during our previous interview, which is this aspect of the Big Five for Life. And I have a hunch we're going to be talking about a lot of different pieces of that. So let me just do a 5-second recap for those who may have listened to the podcast a while ago, or this is the first time they're hearing it. So your purpose, I like to use a nice visual analogy for this. And so to me, your purpose is like a river. And it's the river that answers the question, why am I here? Which is the very first question that I asked in Das Café am Rande der Welt. And if you picture that river, so that is the purpose river, that's the answer to your question, why am I here? And for somebody, it might be, I want to make a difference in the lives of others. It might be, I want to be an entrepreneur. It might be, I want to be an extraordinarily adventurous person throughout my life. Everybody's answer will be different for them. And as you are on that river, the I want to be an extraordinarily adventurous person, the question is, well, what ports of call are you going to stop at along the way? And to me, those are your big five for life. Those are the five specific things you want to do, see, or experience in your lifetime that support your purpose. So it's awesome when you have that certainty, that awareness about what your purpose and what your big five for life are, for a number of reasons, not the least of which, it makes it a lot less stressful in life. And as we were talking about, with all that's going on in the world, and even before this, there are so many distractions. I mean, we have an infinite access to information these days. That can be wonderful in some respects, but it can also be incredibly distracting. And so I like this awareness and this certainty, because when you have that, it's like knowing where your true north is on the compass. It tells you, okay, here's where I want to focus my time and my energy and my other resources, whether they're financial or energetic or something else, because we do have a finite number of resources at our disposal. There's only 24 hours in the day, and the question is, how are we going to spend them? So I just wanted to start with that to say I love that visual analogy, because it keeps me focused, it keeps me balanced to say, oh, well, I'm rolling down my river, and which port of call am I planning on stopping at in the next week, month, year, etc. So the question that you had asked was, what is the process by which someone gets aware of that? Is that sort of what you're looking for?
Yes.
So I think it goes a little bit back to the distraction piece that you were talking about, and that is, it's so easy to be filling our time with things these days because there are so many people trying to get your attention, whether it's through text or through the latest YouTube video or whatever. And again, that's the yin and yang. That can all be great. So if one of your ports of call, one of your big five for life, is that you wanted to go to Africa, for example, on safari, well, you might be fascinated to watch some YouTube videos about Africa. And you might be fascinated to listen to a podcast about travel. But if you don't have that certainty and you're getting 50, 60, 100 of these types of messages every day, whether it's in your inbox, in your email, your texting, social media, I find that it just becomes overwhelming. There's just too much information coming at you at the same time. So allowing yourself to focus and then allowing yourself to start your day, making sure that whatever you're starting your day with is aligned with your personal big five for life and your personal purpose, gets you off on the right track. I like to start my day with a big glass of water, stretching, and that fits well with my purpose, which is to help make a difference in the lives of others. And I can only do that if I'm feeling good. And so starting the day with a big glass of water is really healthy. Doing a nice stretching routine makes me feel energetic throughout the day, and that helps support that. And I say that because it's very easy in this day and age. The first thing we do is pick up our phone and get distracted. Or the first thing we do is log into email and see who wants us to do something for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of the way we're trained in life. So this is a different way of thinking about it, that I'm going to be very conscious about choosing what I'm spending my time on from the very moment that I wake up first thing in the morning.
Do you have goals that you write down, or how do you handle your goals?
Absolutely. I find that the clearer you are in your own head, a number of things happen with that. So yes, I absolutely write them down, and I highly recommend that, both your purpose as well, your purpose for existing statement, as well as your personal big five for life. I highly recommend writing those down, in part because, like I said, it helps you stay clear in your own mind about, wait, is this a distraction or an opportunity that's coming at me? And so it makes it very easy to discern between the two. Also because, just from a pure logical, mathematical perspective, that when someone says to you, oh, what are you working on? And you start talking about one of your big five for life, that increases the chances that if they're a possible who for you, they can help you in some sort of way, that they're going to know that this is what you're doing. If your big dream is to go to New Zealand, but you never tell anybody that your big dream is to go to New Zealand, it makes it very hard for people to help you. And that's really a shame, because people like to help other people in general. And the reason for that is because it makes us feel good when we help someone. But they really, really like to help people when it's something that's a big deal. And so if they know that, wow, you know, going to New Zealand is one of your personal big five for life, it's one of the things you most want to do, see, or experience in your lifetime, and they get to help you with that, it makes them feel super good. So on a scale of 1 to 10, just helping you might be a 2 or a 3 or a 4. But helping you fulfill one of your big five for life is a 10. And so they can't wait to do that. But that's only possible if you're clear about it and then you share with them what it is. Mm-hmm. There is another aspect of this, which to me is probably one of the most powerful things that I've learned in the last number of years. And that is that the universe, or God, whichever word works best for you and your belief system, that the universe is not just listening, but the universe is watching. And so if I sit at my desk at a job that I don't like, or I'm sitting at home, maybe because I'm working from home right now, but I'm working on a job that I don't like, and I'm doing that for 8 hours a day or 9 hours a day, that the universe is watching. And because the universe is a benevolent presence, kind presence, and because we are creatures of free will and we can choose to do whatever we want with our lives, the universe looks down and says, wow, Vera must really love that thing that she's spending 8 hours a day on. As a matter of fact, look at that. She misses time with her family. You know, she misses that sporting event she wanted to do with her friend. My gosh, she must love that so much. You know what? because I'm a benevolent and kind presence, I will give her more of that. And so whatever we're doing, in my experience, is sending a signal to the cosmic algorithm of the universe. And when I use that term, think of it just like Google. Like if you type into Google trips to Africa, at some point, don't be surprised when the ads on the side start saying trips to Africa. Right? There's an algorithm at play that is watching what you do and then giving you stuff. Well, there is a cosmic algorithm of the universe. And so what we do, the way we spend our time, is sending a signal about what's important to us. And so if we don't like what we're getting, it's important that we start sending different signals.
Mm-hmm. And these signals are, in a way, lower level. I see it more like a hierarchy. So I have my big five for life. So I have like the big goals, things I really want to achieve. But then there are concrete plans or even little baby steps on the way, or bigger steps, but not that huge one step going to New Zealand. Yeah. Do you have a technique how you handle that? Because it can be a pretty complex process. Yeah. Many variables.
Absolutely. Yeah. So certainty is the first step, knowing exactly what you want to do. Helping bring it to life can consist of a number of different steps. So let's talk about sampling, and then let's talk about your network. So I'll start with sampling. So the brain has one primary function, which is to keep you alive. And that means it's really good at that, but it can be a detriment as well, because it wants to do today what it did yesterday. And so the brain is very hesitant to make changes and to allow changes to happen. However, if you can get your brain on the right trajectory, it becomes your greatest asset, one of your greatest allies. And the way to do that is through what I call sampling. And I don't think we talked about this. I can't remember if we talked about this when we spoke before. So this hopefully will be a big, big takeaway for everybody who's listening, because this is a life-changing concept. It certainly was for me, and it has been when I've shared it with other people. So the idea is, think about, have you ever been to the grocery store and they're giving away samples of something, cheese or crackers or something like that? And what size is the sample? How big is it?
It's small.
It's small, right? I mean, it's tiny. So your risk is very low, because at worst, you try a 2-centimeter piece of cheese, and if it's not good, you spit it into the napkin and throw it out. But it's very low risk. So the sample size is very low. Now, what's interesting is, if you like it, what size is the thing that they want you to buy?
Much bigger, yeah.
Right? I mean, so you're trying the sample of cheese, it's tiny, but the block of cheese that they would like you to buy is considerably bigger. Mm-hmm. And this simple analogy is a wonderful way for us to think about our brains. The way in which we help our brain get comfortable with the new potential reality is by sampling. And so let's use one of your personal big five for life here, so that it's real, because I can use examples all day long, but let's use one of yours. So share with me one of your big five for life.
I want to write a book.
Perfect. Excellent example. Okay, so I want to write a book. So that would be your big five for life item. And the question now is, what can we do to sample to get your brain comfortable with this concept? And so if I was coaching you, I would say to you, all right, Vera, for the next 7 days, I would like you to spend 5 minutes per day, just 5 minutes, no more than 5 minutes, on this idea of writing a book. And so you can watch YouTube videos about writing a book. You can read an article about writing a book. You can just read a book. But whatever it is, you can only spend 5 minutes a day on this. Right? And at the end of the week, you and I would meet, and I'd say, how was it? And I can tell you from experience that you would tell me something along the lines of, it was really interesting. I learned this. And then you would probably say, but I kind of wanted to spend more than 5 minutes on it, because I'd just get into an interesting article and my 5 minutes would be up and I'd have to close it. And so I would say to you, okay, Vera, so since that went so well, we're going to bump it up to 10 minutes. So this next week, you can have 10 minutes per day to spend on it. And when we met again at the end of that week, you would probably tell me something similar. Well, John, this is going great. I watched this incredibly cool YouTube video about the process of writing, but it was a 12-minute video and I had to turn it off after 10 minutes. And that was frustrating. And so what's interesting is, by doing that and by putting a constraint on the time, we're getting our brain comfortable with the new reality. And our brain now is starting to demand that we spend more time on this thing because it likes it. It's feeling good as we do it. The other thing that happens is, if I had you watching a video by someone who was a writer and they were giving tips about writing, your unconscious mind would look at that video and say, well, that's a person. And they seem to be smiling a lot when they're talking about the writing process. And we're a person. And so, look, they're not dying. They're not getting eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or stepped on by a woolly mammoth. So, you know, this seems pretty safe. And so your unconscious mind is starting to help your brain realize that this new endeavor that Vera wants to do, this writing a book thing, seems to be pretty safe. And if the video you're watching happens to be a woman, your brain is going to make even more connections. Well, she's a woman and I'm a woman and she seems happy and I'd like to be happy with this. All of this is slowly, methodically getting your brain comfortable with it. Now, the last limit I would put on you, Vera, is I would say, Vera, under no circumstances are you allowed to talk to anyone. But however, I would like you to go to a writer's conference, or I would like you to go to somewhere where writers are gathered. But you are not allowed to talk to anybody there about the writing process. Imagine how much this will frustrate your brain, because someone is going to walk up to you and say, hi, who are you? I'm Vera. Oh, what are you here for? I have a writing project. Oh, can I answer any questions? I said, you can't talk about your project. But your brain is going to be like, no, we just want to talk about the project. We want to learn about it. So this simple process of getting your brain comfortable and excited about the new reality through sampling is one of the most effective ways I have ever found about moving from where you are to where you want to go if you are experiencing these type of stumbling blocks.
And then there are still variables that are out of my control, yeah? So that's actually one question that came from the audience, because there are many things I can influence, but also, and especially in challenging times like these, where, for example, not possible to travel or very limited, but also things like, for example, childbirth. The one big thing I want in life is a child, and there are things I simply cannot control that are out of my control. What can I do?
Yeah, and so it's easier to answer these very specific questions when I have the person in front of me and they can tell me exactly what it is for their life. Because hypotheticals are a little harder to answer with concrete answers because it's a hypothetical question. That said, I will do my best. And so, first of all, I would say it's very important to avoid the how question. How do I do this? Because the question is never how, it's who. Who has already done, seen, or experienced what I want to do, see, or experience, and who has been in my situation. And if we take the opportunity of all this technology at our disposal, and we find out who the people are, we learn everything we can about them, it gives us a giant leaping off point for our own adventures. We don't have to solve every problem because somebody has solved most of the problems already. And by finding our who's instead of focusing on how do I do this, it's a great way to accelerate our learning curve. So that would be my first suggestion. The second suggestion is to really understand at a deep level why you want to do something. And so if it is, I want to be a mom, asking yourself why. What are you hoping that that is going to bring to your life? And if it is truly biologically impossible to have your own child, first of all, I would say I've met many women who have been told that it's biologically impossible, but they kept looking for answers. And I'm not saying it's going to work for everyone, but whether it was energy work or whether it was some other form of treatment, they found a solution. And so I always recommend that when someone tells you no, the answer doesn't necessarily stop there. That just means that that particular person doesn't know how to help you. It doesn't mean that the answer overall is no. So again, in that example, maybe it's acupuncture, maybe it's energy work, maybe it's something else. But I would strongly encourage whoever is in that situation to keep looking. And if at the end of the day, the answer truly is that they could not have a child, then I would say, so what is it that you want? Why did you want to have a child? What did it mean to you? And understanding the core essence of that, then I would say, okay, so who else is able to live a life that has those types of emotions or benefits or relationships or experiences, and what did they do? And so maybe it's impossible to physically have a child, but maybe you can adopt, or maybe you can take care of kids in some capacity, something that will also help fulfill the goal of having the child in the first place. So it's a complex question. That one in particular is a very complex question and tied with incredible emotion. So again, if I was working with someone who was asking me specifically, I'd be able to give a really much better answer. But that's sort of the overarching idea, is to understand what the goal means to you and why it means so much to you. Find your who's. And if you encounter a learning curve, a barrier, an obstacle, really find your who's of someone who has already gone beyond that and learn what they did and then imitate that.
Yeah, I also have the question about fear, because I think if I am full of hope, or if I am very open, and maybe the process that's behind me has some good experiences. Yeah, it might be very easy to approach this. But fear can be something that's really paralyzing. And also sometimes it might feel on my path like there are only things coming to stand in my way, but not to push me and help me forwards. And maybe I don't find people who are my who's or who support me. What can I do if I feel almost paralyzed by fear, especially now in times of COVID, if I'm self-employed, yeah, or if I'm worried about my health? What can I do to find hope?
Let me give you a couple of answers to that one. So the first answer I would give is, if you're in that situation, allow yourself to give yourself a break. These are incredibly unusual times. As a parent, I'm being asked to be a teacher, a counselor, a play person because my daughter can't see her friends in the way before. I'm doing that in the same capacity for other members of my family. I take care of my parents. I'm bringing them groceries. I totally get it. We're all being asked to play roles that are new. We're being asked to play them at a level and a depth of expertise that we don't have training for, we don't have expertise for. And so we're all just trying to figure this out. And so the first thing I would say is give yourself a break if you're feeling overwhelmed and stressed about this. You don't have to have all the answers. Nobody expects you to have all the answers. All you can do is the best that you can do. That's going to be good enough. So take the pressure off yourself a bit. And the second thing I would say is, you know, reach out to other people and ask for help. People really do like to help. It makes us feel good. That is why we help other people, is because it makes us feel good. And a lot of us in the human race have trouble asking for help, and we have an even harder time accepting help, especially the people with the biggest hearts. The ones who are the biggest givers often have the hardest trouble receiving. And when I get them in a room and I have a whole crowd of them, I tell them, I say, why are you being so selfish? And they all look at me like I'm crazy. And I say, no, but seriously, you all love to help people. Why do you love to help people? And at the core, the reason is because it makes them feel good when they help someone else. And so I say, well, then if you're not allowing other people to help you, you're not allowing them to feel good. And that's selfish. So let them help you. So I'd say that as well. Another tip I will give is, in the same way that we talked about, the universe is not just listening, but the universe is watching. I have learned in my life that there is an aspect of the cosmic algorithm of the universe which is tapped into our thoughts. And so what we focus on, what we think about, it not only impacts us physiologically. So if I'm feeling depressed and someone sees me, like if I was feeling depressed and someone took a picture and you showed that picture to other people, in all likelihood, they would pick up on my physical cues and they would say, well, he looks depressed. And so you can actually fake out your physiology. And whether you do this through the support of technology, like watch something funny and you'll notice that your posture changes, your demeanor changes. Whether you do this without the use of technology and just adjust your posture, assume a position of confidence, assume a position of contentment, and you'll notice that it changes your physiology because our wiring is connected in that way. And then in conjunction with that, I would say this idea that what we're thinking about in large part is sending a signal, and what we focus on sends a signal, and that signal becomes more of what we get. And this has never been more profound for me than it was a few years ago when I started to implement a practice called a mantra. And the reason I implemented it was because I would have these moments like you're talking about where I was either overwhelmed or my mind would drift back to a time in my past when I did something poorly, and it would just be staying in that moment. It would be recreating and perfecting that moment from 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I realized how unproductive that was and not getting me where I wanted in my life. It just seemed like a complete waste of minutes. And so I implemented a practice where when I'm having those moments of downtime or when my mind is drifting into the unsupportive, negative, fear-based things, I just gently bring it back to the life that I want. I have five specific things that are my mantra. I start with the first one and I repeat it five times. Then I go to the second one and I repeat it five times. I will tell you, Vera, this took me a while. This took me like 3 months to get my brain under control with this because I had, you know, decades of training doing the opposite, where I would let my mind drift into the fear and I'd feel it inside of me. I'd feel the anxiety inside of me. Yeah. And so at the start, I'd be like, okay, I'm feeling that way. Let me bring back to my mantra. I'm not kidding. I literally would say like the first 5 seconds of my mantra and my mind would be back off in La La Land again. Yeah. But Over the course of 3 months, it got to the point where if I was stopped at a stoplight, where before my mind would drift to those other things, now when I stop at the stoplight, the very first thing it defaults to is my mantra.
Yeah.
And this has been, honestly, one of the most life-changing personal practices that I've implemented into my daily routine. I do it first thing in the morning, I do it last thing at night, and I do it any time that I have downtime.
Can you share a piece of it, maybe?
My personal mantra is something that I keep very close to myself, but I will absolutely give you an example. And I'll give you a couple of examples. If someone's big five for life is that they wanted to be a successful entrepreneur, then they would state their mantra item as if it already was. And so instead of saying, I wish I was a successful entrepreneur, the more appropriate way to phrase it is, I am a successful entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And so to give you an example of how this would have played out for me, so I would have stopped at the stoplight, or I'd be standing in line at the grocery store, and my mind would be drifting off to whatever I'd failed at 20 years ago. And the minute I feel it doing that, I literally would say inside my head, I am a successful entrepreneur. I'm a successful entrepreneur. I realize that for some people who are hearing this, they might be like, what is that? Like, what are you talking about? It sounds so nebulous and so woo-woo. But I am telling you, after spending 5 decades on this planet, and spending a very large portion of those decades asking that question, why are we here? And what is the way in which all of this functions? This aspect of how my thoughts impact my reality is a huge part of this cosmic algorithm of the universe. And that's why I like to go back to technology that everybody is used to. If you get on Google and starting first thing in the morning, you type in, I'm stressed out, life is stressful, I'm very afraid. And you just keep typing that all day. What types of articles is Google going to give you? It's going to give you everything associated with that. However, if you get on Google and you type in, I'm a successful entrepreneur, you're going to get something radically different. And when you do this inside your head, what you're tapping into is not just the Google content, but you are tapping into the cosmic algorithm of the universe, which is where all content lies. And that's why it's so powerful.
Yeah, and also I recently researched a lot about hypnotherapy. So super interesting. Milton Erickson, I don't know if you've heard of him, maybe. It's a super powerful element of how we can work with our mind, but not from a woohoo perspective, but from a deep down research effectiveness perspective. So the body and the mind, the imagination especially, is such a powerful tool that just has been ignored from a professional also therapy perspective for quite some time. And I think it's amazing what you can do, and also how naturally we use it to imagine so many things that can go wrong. Yeah, so we're very good in that. I can very much relate. And I always wonder what would happen to this world if we would get the shift from people using their imagination and their fantasy, not for all the fear and all the bad, and also the media would not just project all the bad things that might and could happen, but if we could collectively shift our minds towards all the things that also on the positive side is exactly as likely to happen. Huh?
I would say it's even more likely to happen. Statistically, the things that we hear about are the outliers. We hear about the 1 in a million shots. Mm-hmm. And if we're not careful, we start to think that that is reality. But on the same day that that event happened, there were 5, 10, 100 million people elsewhere on the planet who just had a very nice day.
Yeah.
So I will share with you something. I don't share this very often in interviews. As a matter of fact, I think I've only shared it once before. But you mentioned something that really kicked my intuition off. It's something that it was absolutely a life-changing experience for me in terms of fear. And so since you were talking about it, and I could see the expression on your face as it relates to you. So let me share this story, and I'd love to dialogue with you about this and see if it connects with you. So from the time that I was a little boy, I would be going through my day, and I'm talking about like 4, 5, 6 years old, so very little. And I would see something take place, and I would have a flash of awareness that was very negative. So for example, I would be walking down the street holding my mom's hand, and I would see a truck, and I would have a vision of the truck coming across the curb and hitting me. Barbed wire was particularly horrible. I would see barbed wire if we were near a farm or something, and I would have this horrible image of it hurting me. And I kept all of this to myself. I could never quite understand it. I could never quite explain it to anyone. and I learned to deal with it. And so from the outside, it looked like everything was okay. But on the inside, I was in a perpetual state of uncertainty and fear about what was going to happen. And I don't remember exactly what was the turning point for me, but one day I had a major revelation about this. And what I realized was that what my brain was doing was not telling me what was going to happen. What my brain was doing, or my unconscious mind even, it wasn't even my brain, what my unconscious mind was alerting me to was the worst thing that might happen. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting in the context of like superheroes. Because if you've ever read when you were a kid or watched the movie Spider-Man, Spider-Man has what's called the sixth sense. And so he will sense something behind him before it's actually an imminent danger and know that something is going to happen. And what I realized, Vera, is that what you have, from what I could tell in watching you as you described that, is you have the sixth sense. You have a superhuman capability. And what this means is that when your mind alerts you to this, it is not telling you what's going to happen. It's telling you the worst possible thing. Now, when you're a child, you don't know how to deal with this. I certainly didn't, right? I didn't know how to train it. I didn't know how to help my unconscious mind turn this to an advantage. I'm no longer a kid anymore, and so I have learned. And so let me share with you briefly what I've done to really take this superpower and use it to live an extraordinary life. So once I realized that it wasn't telling me what was going to happen, I was able to let go of the fear of those moments. So then when my unconscious mind would show me the vision, I would say, oh, thank you very much. Now can you show me the best thing that could happen? Mm-hmm. And over time, slowly over time, I found that my unconscious mind stopped showing me the worst thing that could happen and started to show me the best thing that could happen. And I'll give you an example of this in sports. So I tried to make it for many years as a professional beach volleyball player, and I'm still very active. I still play a lot and play very competitively for Tumain. There are times now, Vera, when I will see my opponent take the ball, turn around, and be walking back to the service line. And I will get a flash from my unconscious mind about where that serve is going to go once they turn around, once they throw up the ball, and once they hit it. So I'm not seeing variables that I could be guessing because they're not even facing me yet, right? And I will tell you that when I get those flashes, it's around 95% accurate. So imagine if you can turn this into such an incredible asset as it relates to making decisions about your business, making decisions about your relationships, what to do on a day-in, day-out basis by tapping into the power of your superpower of your intuition. So you have that, my friend. And anybody who's listening on the call that can relate to that story that I shared from my youth, you have it too. And this can be one of the greatest gifts that you ever realize in your life.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
What I find also so interesting on a subconscious level is it is present and you get it, but you don't think it and you don't need to put it in words. And that's why it's so super fast. And you can do this in a millisecond, probably. So you have all these options in a millisecond. It's so amazing what our mind is capable of doing. And we don't have to explain it to anyone. We can just do it without anyone knowing.
I will do the same thing going back to the sports analogy. So in two-man beach volleyball, you're allowed to serve anywhere you want on the back line. And so I will walk back to the service line with the ball in my hands. And I will literally stop for just a millisecond, as you said, and I will get a flash of serve from the right this time. And I'll start moving to the right, and my flash will be like, that's too far, go back a foot. Like, it is unbelievably accurate in terms of giving feedback, giving insights, giving inspiration. Mm-hmm. So again, whether your interest is in playing beach volleyball or in being out there living an adventurous life or doing something entrepreneurial, by training your unconscious mind to give you the type of information and feedback that can best help you, you've tapped into one of the most powerful things at your disposal.
Yeah.
Not to mention it makes life a lot more fun.
Yes. I mean, it's challenging to quiet the noise in your head, I think. To let all the other stuff come up, it's really quieting all the nonsense that your mind can also produce.
It's like a muscle. It's interesting because it's very trainable. So, for example, if you've ever had the experience of you're about to leave the house, you get the flash, I'm forgetting something, but you can't remember what you're forgetting. So you leave the house anyway, you get in the car, you start driving, you're 2 kilometers down the road, and then you remember what you forgot. And, of course, it's something important, so you have to go back. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of like round one. the more you start to train your brain. Round two is you get the flash that you're forgetting something, you walk out of the house, you get to the car, but because you're allowing that space to exist, you're allowing that channel to be open, you reach for the car door and flash. Then you remember what it is, you go back inside and you get it. Over time, as you perfect this, as you build that connection, as you strengthen that muscle, literally you'll be walking through the house before you even go get your car keys, and you're going to get a flash that says, bring this with you. It's like you're saying, it's like the millisecond flash insights, and they just come at you and come at you and come at you. I will give you a tip that someone shared with me many years ago. He was a neuroscientist, and his name is Dr. James Fadigan. And he had a technique where he would teach young children to name their brain. And they would literally pick a name. You know, it could be butterfly, it could be hummingbird, it could be whatever. But whatever they wanted their brain to be named. And he said that if you can establish a dialogue with your unconscious mind, and using this name your brain was a technique that he would teach, he said it just creates such a wonderful interplay between you and your unconscious mind. And so, for example, my unconscious mind, my brain, I named it Sophocles for wisdom. And so when I'm walking through the house and I get this flash of make sure you bring this, I just take a microsecond, say thank you, Sophocles, and then I move on. I believe this in part helps facilitate that connection. It's like giving positive reinforcement to a child, an appropriate behavior, and they just do more of that. I think the same thing happens with your unconscious mind. So by naming your brain and thanking your brain when it does something good for you, for some reason, I know it's, this all sounds so silly sometimes, but
no,
for some reason, whether I can explain to you exactly why it works or not, it does work. And therefore, I think it's worth giving a try to for a while. At least it's proven incredibly beneficial in my life.
Yeah, I would really like to talk about inspiration. And also, I would like to come back to this part of how do I find, because I know that so many people are out there, and how do I find what really gives my life meaning? I've been searching for so long. Yeah, what does it mean and how can I get there? So in your new book, What I've Learned, or Was ich gelernt habe, auf Deutsch, you're talking about that everyone has insights to share. So you share yours or what you've learned. And if I understand correct, you speak about how everyone has something to share and something to give for others, what they've learned. Is that a way to access what I can give and what gives my life meaning or purpose?
It certainly could be, right? The idea behind the What I've Learned book is that I don't think that everyone is desperately waiting to hear what I've learned. My hope with the book is by sharing some of the things that I've learned, that it will stimulate conversation. And that people will, they'll reflect on, wait, what do I know? And maybe I've forgotten some of that and I can reapply it to my own life. Or maybe I can share it with someone who matters to me, my child, a sibling, a parent, a friend, a coworker. But if each of us had the opportunity to share some of what we've learned and the whole community grows because of that, like that's pretty awesome. That's pretty spectacular. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I think, the hope with these podcasts, right? Is you and I have a chance to talk about stuff. We learn from each other. And then everyone who's listening, hopefully by the time they're done listening for an hour, has taken away at least a few things that they've learned and can apply to their own life. And so that certainly is one tactic of reflecting on what you've learned in your life as it relates to the things that you enjoy, the people whose lives you admire. I always say someone is living your dream life. It might as well be you. And so even taking a few minutes and writing down a list of people who are living your dream life and what makes that your dream life. Is it the job that they have? Is it the relationships that they have? Is it the way they spend their time? Is it how much money they have? You know, what really makes that your dream life? And then going back to the who technique we talked about. So, okay, so who are these people and what was their path? Did they go to study graphic design? Did they go to learn how to be the best croissant maker in the world? I mean, the answer is going to be different depending on what everybody's answer is for what is my dream life. So that also can provide incredible clues as to what it is. Another simple technique, and this is, you know, right now with COVID, and so people might be listening to this years later and be like, what was COVID? But
I don't think so.
But
let's hope for it.
Yeah, let's hope for it. But because people have less flexibility and accessibility to be out there wandering the world, here's a technique that you can use that's very simple, whether it's 5 minutes from your house or, you know, anywhere that you find yourself in the world. Asking yourself the very first question from Das Café am Roundabout, why am I here? And allowing yourself to ponder that question as you walk, especially as you're walking in nature. is an incredible way to start to get clues. Because the unconscious mind is not going to start speaking to you. It's not going to say, Vera, I'm so glad that we have the chance to talk today. It just doesn't do that. It can't communicate in the same vocal way that we communicate with each other as humans. So what it is going to do is it's going to start answering your questions, but it's going to start doing that in the form of images, colors, memories, flashes of something that you maybe saw in a movie or read about in a book. And these are all clues to help you uncover that which you seek. And so if you're trying to figure out your purpose or your big five for life, going for a walk in the woods, no phone, and I'm a huge fan of listening to content, or obviously we're on a podcast. If this is your particular quest, then allow yourself some time every day where you're not being distracted by anything except your own thoughts, and especially do your best to put yourself in a natural environment. So no car traffic, no city noise, just get yourself into a place where you can think and be in nature. And go for a walk and ask yourself, why am I here? Go for a bike ride, ask yourself, why am I here? And if you do this and you keep track of the thoughts that come to you and the images that come to you, you start to get patterns and clues. And these can be incredibly great guiding images for where you want your life to go. I always share with people, there's sort of three ways, I think, to figure this out, to answer your core question. One is you figure it out on your own. And you can do that in a slow, staggered fashion, like I'm talking about. You can take an hour a day dedicated towards it. Another way is to go off and do a massive adventure. So I went and backpacked around the world when I was 32, came back with a whole new perspective about who I was, what my purpose on the planet was, what I wanted to do with my life. At the moment, that's not as easy to do. And so maybe that's less accessible. But that said, maybe you can prepare for launch. You could spend the next 6, 9, 12 months preparing your life so that you can then go take a year off and backpack around the world. So that's another option. And the third option is work with someone who can get you to the answer quickly. Mm-hmm. And so many, many years ago, I was getting so many people asking me this exact question you're asking me. And they said, can you help me? And so I spent 30 days basically doing the same thing that I just told you about. I asked myself the question, if my life depended on it and I had 2 days with someone, what questions would I ask them to help them uncover their answers? And I created an experience out of that called the Big Five for Life Discovery Experience. And so not everybody likes to go through an experience. I'm sort of mixed. Like sometimes I want coaching. Like if I'm going to play sports and I want to accelerate my progress, I want a good coach. Other things in my life, like if I'm out there kayaking a river, I just kind of want to do it on my own. I don't necessarily want a coach guiding me through the process. So the answer is it depends on you, the listener, for which one of those you prefer. But what I want you to know is that if you are looking for help, if you are looking for guidance, it's out there. Like I guarantee you, anybody who is determined to figure out their big five for life, determined to figure out their life purpose, and who's willing to dedicate 2 days to that experience, you're going to walk out with 100% certainty. Mm-hmm. I also guarantee that if you go backpack around the world for a year, you're going to walk out with 100% certainty. So the choice is entirely yours.
So I just have one thought. That you can take the help that's there if you really want to and you're open for it. Your mind also has a lot to offer, yeah? And maybe sometimes we just don't take it seriously enough and we don't quiet down the noise and all the distraction you were talking about to hear ourselves. I think that's so important that we have the answers. And sometimes it's another person that can help you or a safari, a program, something. And sometimes it's just to quiet down the noise, or maybe a combination, to quiet it down, to actually see and catch the inspiration, catch the ideas that are there. Is that how you get your inspiration? For example, for your new book, I know you wrote about how you got it and you were bored.
So first of all, I want to answer your question because you're 100% right. So I personally do not teach the two-day experience anymore. I've trained people to teach it so that they can do it in the language of the country where it's in. But I will tell you that back when I was teaching it and when I first started sharing it with people, the very first thing I would tell them is the answer that you're going to discover over the course of the 2 days is already inside of you. Mm-hmm. My job is to simply remove the layers of you can't, you have to, you should, you shouldn't. Mm-hmm. If I can clear away those layers by asking you very interesting questions that help open up your unconscious mind to your conscious mind, you're going to discover something, and that thing is already inside of you. Everybody already knows what their big five for life are. Everybody already knows what their purpose is. It's just that it's been buried under so many layers that sometimes we forget that it's there. So yeah, to answer your question about the What I've Learned book, though, I was bored. I was in Germany and I was doing a media tour, and it was a Sunday and I needed something from the mall, and I was staying at a hotel. I didn't know the city I was staying at all. And so I asked at the hotel, is there a mall around here? And they're like, oh yeah, there's a mall. And they showed me sort of where it was on the map. And so I go for a walk, it takes me 30 minutes to get there, and the mall is closed. And so I was like, oh, this is so great. Thanks a lot. And
Germany.
I don't know why I didn't think about it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, so the mall's closed. That was quite a waste of my 30 minutes of walking time, you know. And so I started walking back and I was bored. And so I don't know, something just came to me and I was like, wait, so what did that moment teach me? You know, what have I learned in that moment? Mm-hmm. And I literally asked myself that exact wording, like, what have I learned? Something just clicked inside of me. And then literally the entire walk back, the 30-minute walk back, I was seeing things in nature. Like, I saw a woman who was feeding pigeons, and I stopped and I watched her for about 10 minutes, and she was so happy. And all she was doing was standing there and feeding a bagel to pigeons, and she looked happier than the vast majority of anybody else I saw that day. And so I started to get all of these insights, like, wait, what does it take to make us happy? Maybe it's not something big and grandiose. Maybe it is something as simple as, I like to feed pigeons, so I'm going to feed the pigeons. Mm-hmm. And having that certainty for ourselves of what is our answer. So it was a very cool experience. I'm very grateful the mall was closed, because if it had been open, I don't think I would have had that aha moment that led to the book.
So maybe sometimes it's the boredom we need. It's being...
I think you're totally onto something. When I was growing up, boredom is what led us to be creative. Because we'd all be like, I'm bored. And our friends would be like, I'm bored too. Okay, so what do we want to do? And we would have to come up with an answer.
Yeah.
These days, I see a lot of, I'm bored, so I pick up my phone and I read somebody else's version of life.
Yeah.
And so we're missing that opportunity to sit in the boredom for a couple seconds to then stimulate the creativity to go be not bored.
Yeah. There's so many people from the outside that can influence what we think we want. Because I know we're coming to an end, but I think it's very interesting also for our society and for what's possible for us as a collective that we start to question our definition of success. And I know it's connected, but many people don't even ask the questions for their purpose and the big life goals. They're not even at that point. They just follow an image of what supposedly being successful means. That's in most cases a very, very uninspired, not very diverse picture of what makes people unhappy. Yeah, and you have a chapter on success, and I like the book very much, and I think it's very interesting to ask the question about what does success mean for me. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So first of all, I want to say that society at large doesn't do a great job of helping us when we're younger think through these types of things. In all my years of schooling, and I went through whatever, 8 years of, you know, kindergarten through seventh grade, another 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, another 2 years of graduate school, I don't think in all that time I ever had a single person ask me, what are your big five for life? What does success mean to you? It's almost like everyone's on the same treadmill moving in the same direction. We have to teach every kid the same stuff. So there's very few opportunities, or at least for me when I was younger, to get this kind of awareness that, oh, I get to pick for myself, and I can pick from this entire spectrum of cool stuff. And so I don't blame someone at all if they're in that space or they feel just called to imitate someone else's version of success, because I think that's what they see every single day. And it's not surprising. Mm-hmm. That said, if someone starts to feel that sense of boredom or dissatisfaction by simply following everyone else's definition of success, it does open up a wonderful opportunity to say, well, wait, I get statistically 28,900 days on the planet, and hopefully it's more, you know, sometimes it's less, statistically it's about 28,900. What do I want to spend my days on? What would truly make me happy? Because to me, having been on the planet now as many decades as I have, I've learned, and it took me a long time to learn this, but the definition of success for me used to be tied to financials. I thought, well, when you hit a certain financial number, mm-hmm. then you're successful. That was sort of what I learned when I was growing up. And what I realize now is it's still a number, but it's not a financial number for me. Now the definition of success is how many minutes of my day do I spend doing what I want, the way I want, with the people that I want. And if at mm-hmm. the end of the day, I've got a ton of minutes spent doing something that was super fun with the people that I enjoy hanging out with in the way that I wanted to spend my minutes, that's a great day. Mm-hmm. So redefining the definition of success, and then this goes back to your big five for life, which takes you right back to that very first question, why am I here? Right? Because when I know why I'm here, and I can picture myself on that purpose river, my purpose river, whatever that is for me, and I can picture those ports of call, which are my big five for life, now I've started to get a really good insight into my big five for life. And now if I can go find some who's who are living that big five for life, and I can spend my precious minutes watching YouTube videos about, all right, I want to be an adventurer. How did they get their start? What was their path? Mm-hmm. Honestly, it changes the whole feel of the day. Instead of feeling that fear you were talking about, instead of feeling lost, instead of feeling boredom, now you actually feel excited when you wake up first thing in the morning. And I'm not saying every second is going to be an up moment. That's not the way life works. Of course, there's ups and there's downs. But if you do it right, and by right, I mean you allow yourself to live the life that you want to live, even when you have down moments, those down moments are now higher than what used to be your high moments. And that's a good spot to be.
And also the down moments allow you to live the full spectrum of life. And sometimes I would even say if I live a shallow life, where I don't open up for all the opportunity, but also all the pain and the joy and the pain and everything that is there. If I don't allow myself, I get numbed. Yeah. So the whole curve is just getting flatter.
Yeah. So when I wrote the book, The Big Five for Life, you know, it's a very emotional story. You learn on page one that this person, Thomas Durrell, is dying. You learn that he's going to die. And then over 240 some pages, you come to love who he is and what he stands for. And then he dies. Vera, when I read that book still, I mean, I wrote it, I edited it 50 times. I've read it so many times. When I read it today, I cry every time I get to the point at the end. I feel what you're talking about. I feel that pain. I feel that depth. I think life without having the opportunity to feel that would be very shallow.
Yeah.
Because those moments teach us every bit as much as the wonderful, happy moments. They remind us of the importance of living the life that is uniquely gifted to us. They remind us of the people that we loved that have passed and how grateful we were that they were in our life. They remind us that life is not guaranteed, that the minutes that we have are precious, and it's important to take advantage of the opportunity to do what we want because the game does end. It's not going to go on forever. So I'm right there with you. I think those moments of feeling the full spectrum of emotion, it'd be very shallow without that.
Yeah. And what you were saying with your definition of success, I heard an interview the other day. I think it was Jim Collins. He's an author on business topics mostly. I don't remember exactly how, but he has an Excel spreadsheet, which is a little bit weird. But I really like the idea of counting the hours. And in this case, it was about the creative work you invest every day. And he has like a rolling system where he doesn't have to do exactly the same amount every day. But he has a rolling system of how he puts creative hours or invests creative hours in his day and tracks and controls himself, actually. Because for him, that's an important factor of how much input he gives and how much time he puts. And I think that's something interesting also about creativity. It just has there's so much resistance against it. Yeah. So if you are on your way, for example, for me, writing a book or even finding with all the topics and all the ideas, that's also challenging for some people. I know some people ask the question as well. So many ideas, so many things to do. Yeah. In my case, so many things I can write a book about. Sitting down, doing the work and focusing on what really matters can be super challenging because it is my way. Yeah.
So a couple of things leap to mind about that. One is, as a society, we've gotten pretty good at developing things like Fitbits, right? Or devices, which tell us how many steps you've walked today. And so we're sort of culturally aware that if you want to achieve a goal and you have a number attached to that goal, that it's a good idea to have some way to measure it. And so I think that although the spreadsheet idea would be a little over the top for me personally, having a cognitive awareness that says, wait, if I want to be an entrepreneur, I should be spending more time on being an entrepreneur than on just like watching television, you know, or on doing something else that's sort of not in alignment with the life that I want to live. So I think that awareness is a wonderful thing. And I will tell you in regards to the book thing, since I am an author, I'll give you some very specific tips that have helped me a lot in that regard. Because I very often people who are listening to podcasts also have writing or podcasts or book dreams, etc. So when it comes to writing a book, I think it's a good idea to use a similar technique that we talked about of who is living your dream life. And so if you are thinking about writing a book, put together a list of which books are your favorite books. And then look for patterns across those books. So if you take five books that say, these are my favorite books, and you say, well, why do I like those so much? Are they all fiction or are they all nonfiction? If they're all fiction, do they have a female lead or a male lead? If they are nonfiction, are they all thick books or thin books? Just look for patterns, look for trends. When I first wrote The Café on the Edge of the World, Das Café am Rande der Welt, and I didn't know what size the book was going to be, I literally took one of my favorite books off the bookshelf. I took a ruler out and I measured the book. And I said, okay, it's 4 1/4 inches by 7 inches. My book is going to be 4 1/4 inches by 7 inches. Oh, it's half inch margins. My book is going to have half inch margins. So a simple step like that helps your unconscious mind start to connect the dots and say, you know what? Yeah, if I was going to write a book, I'd want it to be like one of these because these are my favorites. And why not start there? And then the second thing I would say about time management, I find that if I'm working on a project like a book project, that if I get up in the morning and before I do anything else that's distracting, before I would start on emails or phone calls or anything else, I say for the first hour of my day, after I've brushed my teeth and taken a shower and greeted my family, that next hour is 100% dedicated towards just flow, writing down whatever is coming through me. I don't judge it. I don't evaluate it. I don't edit it. I just let it flow. And then the next day, I do the exact same thing for that first hour. And I literally will not check email. I will not pick up my phone. Because the minute you do that, oh my gosh, it's like the biggest time suck ever. The minute you open that inbox on your email, the next thing you know, an hour has gone by. And so by focusing, I also think it sends a strong message to your unconscious mind. Oh, look, Vera is starting her day. And she's turned off all the electronic devices. And she's only focusing on the book. This must be important to her. And because of that, your unconscious mind starts to really feed you the ideas that you're looking for.
And are you then editing what you just wrote, or are you?
No, I write until it's done. And I only start editing after I feel that I've written everything that I wanted to say. And then I go back through and I start editing very, very detailed, methodically, trying to find the perfect word for every sentence. And I'll go through that countless times. I would bet that I edit a book that I write at least 50 times before it's done. But no, the editing in the interim process is one of the biggest blocks to creativity. You want that content to just flow out of you. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of the same technique you would use if you wanted to be an adventurer. So if you wanted to be an adventurer and you were learning about being an adventurer, you don't want to start evaluating your skills yet. You want to just absorb all of that energy and get all those good vibes going before you start sort of putting restrictions on it.
Mm-hmm. Just one final question. You're an adventurer, yeah, or you want to write a book. And there are so many things, you know, places that you think are worth visiting. So many things I can do, so many ideas I have, so many projects that are possible. How do I kill my darlings? How do you kill your darlings?
So I don't kill them.
Do you say that? Yeah.
Yes, I don't kill them. I put them in a very nice house and I let them play while I'm working on something else. And so okay. I think that's a wonderful question, a wonderful analogy. So I have lots of good ideas that come to me both as an entrepreneur as well as an author. And so I keep them in a good idea file. And I literally have a master file called Good Ideas, and then I have subfolders in there. And I will take a Word document, I'll write down the idea, I'll write down my creative thoughts around it, I'll put it in that folder, and I'll just let it sit there. And that way I don't feel like I'm losing it. I'm telling it, you go play for a while, and at some point in the future, I'll probably come back and we'll play together. But for now, you need to play on your own for a little.
And how do you pick the one that you actually pick?
For me, it's a matter of just sampling and starting. Okay, so I'm going to start on this and see how it feels. And if it feels right, this goes back to that intuition piece.
Yeah.
I look for clues from my unconscious mind that says, wow, this has you most excited. And when you're working on this one, the ideas are flowing effortlessly and fast and furious. And as an example, you say I could do a book project. I could do a different entrepreneurial venture. I could schedule my trip. You've got all these different options. And you sort of get these clues, like all of a sudden someone will make an introduction from you to someone who's an author, right? And then you happen to catch out of the corner of your eye an article about writing a book. These are all like clues that are like, wait a minute, maybe that book thing is the thing that is calling me right now. And because you're not saying no to the other things, you're just saying not right now, I think it allows the unconscious mind to focus.
Yeah. Okay, I have still so many questions, but we are coming to an end.
I guess we'll have to do a third round.
Yeah, I think so. But I wanted to mention a final thing, because something I really took away from your book when reading, especially the chapter about, I think it was success, the importance of role models. And I know that you mentioned it along the interview many times. However, I really wanted to stress that, because that was something that I took away for me and that I'm going to focus on from a perspective of really looking out for people that can be not only an inspiration, but that really embody in a certain part of what they're doing, not as a whole, but who really embody and have a strong image I can connect to for what I really want to achieve and bring into my life. There was much more also around role models. I have that on my list. I really wanted to stress that, because for me, it was a good takeaway. Yeah.
Thank you. And I love your take on it. I love your twist on it. You can look at someone, let's use your author example. So you might look at someone who is an author and you say, wow, I love the way that they write. I love the way that they tell a story. It doesn't matter if you don't like who they are when they're not being a writer. Like, you don't like, maybe they're going to all night raves and partying and it's something that you don't connect to or whatever. You don't have to like every aspect of that person as a human being and their hobbies and their other interests in order for you to appreciate the way that they write and to learn something from that process. That is a huge and wonderful takeaway for everyone to apply. You can mix and match. You know, you can take one great thing from one person, another great thing, and sort of combine that all together into your ideal and then be that ideal.
Yeah. So it's a book worth reading, very much worth reading. And before we come to my final questions, I have special questions for you because it's your second time on the podcast. But it's a quick round of final questions. Before we get there, we will link, of course, your new book, also all the existing books you have. And is there anything else we can put into the show notes? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm available on all social media platforms at John Strelecki. And I have to say, my team, especially the last 4 or 5 months, has really helped me do a much better job. We're putting out a lot of inspirational content, whether it's through quotes or concepts or ideas on social media. And so if you're looking for that little pick-me-up every day or every couple of days, definitely check out what we're doing. Again, it's on Instagram and Facebook and all social media platforms. Mm-hmm. Also, you can go to my website, johnstrelecki.com.
Perfect. We'll put all of that into the show notes. And now my final questions. And those are from people who would listen to the podcast and who sent me their questions beforehand. So I have 3, maybe 4.
I'm ready.
What makes you happy every day?
Spending time doing the things that I love and with the people that I care about.
Is there a question that no one should ever ask you? Which one is it?
What is the question no one should ever ask me? Oh gosh, I don't know. It would probably have something to do with food, because I'm not really a huge food guy. So if someone is like hugely into food and they're like, would you like to go try this? I'm probably going to be somewhat lackadaisical in my answer. So that's probably not a question to ask me.
Okay. And is there a question that you have not or maybe not enough been asked?
Ooh.
But you would like to be asked?
Yeah. Well, I would say I think we've actually covered a lot of it on this particular interview, but I find this concept of the cosmic algorithm of the universe to be one of the most fascinating aspects of the human life experience. And so I would love it if people would throw me questions which inspire my mind to think about it at an even deeper level. That would be awesome.
Yeah, nice. And then the last one, what are your thoughts on love? It's a small question. And there's a chapter in the book, actually.
Well, so I'll use my intuition and respond with the very first thing, which is it's not just based on a single moment. Love is based on lots and lots of small moments. And so taking the time to demonstrate to the people that you care about that you love them. And as a matter of fact, I'll give you a tip, because I was just doing an interview yesterday and I was sharing something about parenting, because the gentleman who was interviewing me has a daughter who's on the way. And so I was thinking about what are the most important things I've ever learned as a father as it related to being a parent of a daughter. And one of the things that I chose to do very early on before she was born is I wanted to let her know that I was happy that she was here and that I was grateful and so appreciative of the fact that she chose me to be her dad. And so I decided that anytime that I would walk into a room that I would smile. And so when the baby is born and, you know, it's 2 in the morning or 3 in the morning and it's your turn to do the feeding and you're sleep deprived and you're fumbling around to find the bottle or whatever the case is, it's very easy to be just sort of a zombie. But I made the conscious decision that before I would go in that room, I would pause for just a second and I would put a smile on my face. And when I went to pick her up, I would make sure that I was smiling. And I think that is one of the best decisions that I ever made in terms of letting her know that I loved her right from the start.
So that's a very beautiful story to finish. Thank you very much. It was such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for everything that you share with your books and also with these interviews. It was a pleasure and I just wish you all the best.
Thank you. And the same to you and for everybody who's out there listening. You know, be well, be safe, stay healthy. And I look forward to interacting with everyone on the home turf of Germany as soon as possible.
Yeah.
We'll see you all very soon.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass du aus diesem Gespräch für dich viel mitnehmen konntest und einfach es auch genossen hast, so ein bisschen mit freiem Geist und vielleicht auch mal aus einer anderen Perspektive auf das ja manchmal auch ein bisschen anstrengende Zielthema, was will ich eigentlich im Leben, zu blicken und vielleicht für dich so deinen eigenen, etwas leichteren Weg und auch die Geduld mitbringst, dass sich das entwickeln darf, dass das auch entstehen darf und dass es ganz normal ist, dass wir nicht einfach so wissen, was der Sinn ist hinter all dem, sondern dass es auch Teil unserer Reise ist, das herauszufinden. Wir alle haben ganz viel zu geben, zu teilen und auch einander zu schenken. Insofern ist das vielleicht für dich heute in diesem Gespräch ein ganz schöner Anknüpfungspunkt, um für dich weiter auf deine ganz persönliche Reise zu begeben. Wenn dir der Podcast gefällt, freue ich mich riesig, wenn du ihn teilst, vielleicht auch diese Folge mit jemandem teilst, dem oder der diese Folge helfen könnte. Seine Riesenunterstützung, damit der Podcast gefunden wird, die Menschen erreichen kann, für die er hier mit viel Liebe produziert wird. Und ich wünsche dir eine wunderschöne Woche. Ich danke dir für deine Zeit, deine Unterstützung, die du mir hier schenkst und wünsche dir alles Liebe, deine Vera.